When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bob, do you have anything to say with Rose going out?
Is Amy Pilot here right now?
Here's the Amy Pilot moment.
Because I need her to walk off this podcast. What the fuck just happened? Are we fucking kidding right now?
Since the TARDIS first appeared on telescreens on November 23, 1963, the Doctor has had dozens of companions, typically ordinary humans who join the time-traveling alien on wild, wacky, wonderful, and sometimes scary adventures. With Doctor Who poised to celebrate its 60th anniversary this fall, and the show about to get a massive revamp courtesy of returning showrunner Russell T. Davies, returning Doctor David Tennant, and new Doctor Shuri Gatwa, there's no better time or space for the great pop culture debate to determine the best Doctor Who companion. Captain Jack Harkness may one day be the face of Bo, but I'm currently the face of Ho. I'm your host, Eric Resniak. Please help me welcome my panelists for this episode. We think our next panelist is Bob Erlenbach, but he won't take off his gas mask. Bob, is that you?
Eric, are you my mummy?
I've never had a sugar mummy. If I wanted a sugar mummy, I could probably go and get one. Next, we go together like fish fingers and custard. It's Kara Austin.
A timeless classic, to be sure.
Well, new mouth, new rules. I say that to all my prey. And finally, some people call him daddy or sir, but you can just call him master. It's Michael Schwartz.
Hey, Eric. I'm just hoping in my next regeneration, you can call me Missy.
You're my secret favorite. Don't tell the others. And joining us from inside the TARDIS is producer Curtis Creekmore. And just like the TARDIS, parts of Curtis are bigger on the inside. In the interest of time, and the Doctor is always interested in time, we're going to skip the preamble, which you can now find in bonus episodes on our feed. But do head to Great popculturedebate.com and find the listener bracket for this episode so you can play along with us at home. With that being said, that's all out of the way. We're going to move on to these debates.
Lead on. Allons-y.
First up, it's a unanimous victory for ultimate number one seed Rose Tyler, who had nothing to fear from four seed Joe Grant.
Bad wolf.
Next three quarters of the panel want to stay hitched to three seed River Song.
Hello, sweetie.
But Michael prefers The Boy Who Waited, two seed Rory Williams. Michael, stand as fast as the last centurion and defend Rory. Bob, don't worry about spoilers. Tell us why we should let the river run. I'll let Michael go first.
Rory is just like, the Doctor is the brains. Amy Pond is the center of that whole thing, but Rory is the heart of the relationship. Without Rory, I don't know that it would be nearly as dynamic of a companion pair that you would get with anyone. And you ask anybody that they love this. Amy Pond and Rory they're synonymous. And I'm glad they were in separate brackets so that I could at least vote for both of them and move forward. But this is like the heart that does. Rory will follow Amy anywhere, will follow her across time, across space. He comes to this like understanding relationship that he has with the Doctor. And like you said, the last centurion, he literally waits for Amy at that tomb as the last centurion in there. So I think that it would be remiss of us to not at least discuss how important Rory has been all the way up to the end. And like, that is like, Rory is the reason that Amy leaves the Doctor. She just can't, when angels take Manhattan, that's the reason they move on. It's because like Rory gets caught by the angels, taken back in time, but Amy has to make that choice. And she chooses Rory in the end. And I think that just continues to speak to that level of the relationship, the importance that they have. It doesn't work if Rory's not there. I don't think that Matt Smith would have been as successful as a Doctor if he didn't have Arthur Deverell there playing that role, playing that thing, and adding that heart and that love that comes from Rory into that entire arc.
Kara, you were going to say something about Rory?
I was going to say that, like, I agree with everything that Michael's saying. And I remember when Rory was first introduced, I feel like, you know, we had this like boyfriend fiance character introduced that first episode, and that could have really gone a boring wet blanket way. And I remember being very, and still I'm very impressed with the way they turned his story around. And, you know, he wasn't just a sad Charlie Brown walking, you know, with the piano music all the time. He came into his own. And so I think Rory is a very good character. I'm not switching my vote. I still stand with River Song.
Bob?
So this is where I make my River Song argument.
I would love for you to make a River Song argument.
I agree with everything that everyone has said about Rory. Rory is awesome. And what I love about Rory is he could have easily just been the tag along from the very beginning of his introduction. They end up giving him a really great story arc and multiple story arcs over time, the Centurion all the way up to the Angels, that whole piece. So he really is great, but River Song is more integral, more important, more critical to the overall story of Doctor Who beyond just Matt Smith. It goes to David Tennant, it goes on to Peter Capaldi, right? She is the ultimate companion because she is his wife. From the jump, she's just so interesting and mysterious, and you really don't know. It's a really cool conceit as it pertaining to her with regards to they're operating on backwards timelines, right? He's going forward, she's going backwards. I think that's right. I don't think it's the other way, where they're meeting at different points where one knows things about the other that they don't know have happened yet, right? And it's just a really fun exchange that you peel back these layers over time. And not to mention the fact Sister is doing it for herself. She has so much agency. She is so, like, she takes care of herself. She gets herself out of binds. When they reintroduce her in the Time of Angels, I think was the reintroduction, and she escapes from prison. Classic, like her sailing through space into the TARDIS. But I just think she's just so critical overall.
Yeah, I agree with everything Mike said about Rory. He is amazing. I'm not going to switch my vote here. I think that is 3-4 River, 1 for Rory. It is not in any way a disparagement of Rory. We love him, but we're going to move River Song on to round 2. Next, it's another unanimous decision for 1-seed Amy Pond, who demoted 4-seed Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart. Next, the majority of the panel wants to keep chronicling the adventures of 2-seed Sarah Jane Smith, but I'm the lone holdout who doesn't want to put the lid on 3-seed Bill Potts. I know I won't win here, but I wanted to at least say a few words on Bill. So if that's okay, just let me get this out of the way, and then we can advance Sarah Jane, who should absolutely advance here. Let me be very clear about that. But Bill Potts, played by Pearl Mackey, is one of the most tragic Who companions, in my opinion. And I'm afraid she's been largely forgotten by the fandom. Like, of the modern Who companions, I never hear her mentioned, like, ever. That's partially because Bill was essentially an interim companion. She came in at the end of the 12th Doctor's run, following the end of the Clara arc and up to 12th Regeneration. She's notable for being, I believe, someone fact-check me on this, the only the second non-white companion and the first LGBT companion. Bill was also just a fucking delight. She was a breath of fresh air after the incredibly dark final Clara stories. She immediately brightened up the series and brought a spark back to the Doctor, and we really needed it because it was a grind at the end of that Capaldi era. Unfortunately, it all ended very badly indeed, as Bill ends up shot, turned into a Cyberman, and then ultimately her lesbian lover, who I believe somehow turned into some water alien, it's a little weird for me, I can't remember, I haven't watched it in years, extracted her soul from the Cyberman suit, and the two of them went off to explore the universe together. I guess that's lovely in the abstract, but it was absolutely brutal in the moment that it all happened. I remember watching the episode where you realize the Cyberman is Bill, and I was like, no, like, what are you doing? But all that being said, I think Bill's lovely. I wanted to speak on her, but Sarah Jane should move forward here. I'm going to guess I get no objections. All right, so we will be advancing Sarah Jane Smith into round 2. Next, it's another unanimous decision for 1-seed Donna Noble, who ousted our most recent companion, 4-seed Yasmin Khan from 13's run. The panel is evenly split between 2-seed Clara Oswald and 3-seed K-9. Michael, why do you find the impossible girl impossible to resist? Kara, why do you continue to give K-9 your affirmatives? And I'm going to have Kara go first.
When K-9's not on screen, Doctor Who wants everybody to ask, where's K-9?
100%. Affirmative.
Affirmative. K-9 is just a part of a very, like, unique time within Doctor Who. Because, I mean, K-9 comes in a lot, you know, like the time of Tom Baker and Sarah Jane. And it's this, you know, it's that kind of like weird gimmick. You know, it is the weird gimmicky ad to a show. Like, let's give them a robot dog, you know, a tin dog, because that'll be cool. The kids will like that. We can make toys. And really with that, when you start, like, you know, if you start thinking of the iconography of Doctor Who, you get to the TARDIS, you get to a Sonic. K-9's like 3 or 4 for a character that really hasn't been in it that much. And then every time they wrote something in where K-9 would have to be sacrificed or destroyed or whatever, they brought him back because the public demanded it. And of all of the companions, you know, going along with Sarah Jane, gets his own spinoff too, I believe, because he's with, yeah. So I think, you know, it's this quirky, weird little character. Everybody, you know, man's best friend, doctor's best friend. In, you know, again, the cute little voice, you know, terribly designed for getting around the universe. There's sometimes where he had to completely sit out of the adventure because it's like, whoops, sand, can't do it. But I think it makes him lovable, and it's, you know, it's the weird part of Doctor Who. It's that embracing of making do with what you have, budget and materials wise too. But I think he's just, you know, a classic embodiment of the weirdness of Doctor Who, and that's why I love him.
Yeah, and Doctor Who really is about making the most with what you have, isn't it? So K-9 is true to the spirit of the show. Michael, talk to us about Clara.
So this pairing was a challenge for me as to which way we would vote on it. So I eventually went with Clara on this one, more for what I thought K-9 wasn't versus what Clara actually is. You know, Clara is a critical component of the Impossible Girl. We get that whole storyline she crosses. She's the transition between the two doctors for us in the end. She is part of that storyline that, like, transitions between the two doctors. She is a critical part of the canon in the end. You take her out and you get a lot of things falling apart. That doesn't happen as much with K-9, I think. Still, again, a great character, provides comic relief at the right time. You know, it's the embodiment of the early Doctor Who ethos, is you do with what you got kind of thing that Kara was talking about. But in the end, I thought that Clara was more critical to storyline.
Yeah, and I think she, correct me if I'm wrong, again, I haven't watched these since I watched them air originally. In the 50th anniversary special, isn't it essentially she's retconned into basically every other doctor's timeline to make sure they get to where they need to go? So she is like, literally, right, everything, everywhere, all at once. Like,
and she's the one that directs the first doctor to the TARDIS.
They have two very different jobs in the
universe. Oh, yeah, they absolutely do. And it really is an apple and oranges comparison.
Yeah. It really is. Bob, where are you on this one? I know the answer, but I'm excited to hear you shit all over Clara Oswald.
I'm going to go on. I don't know if I'm going to be controversial. I just can't stand the character. And I don't want to speak ill of anyone. I'm not sure if it's a phenomenon of the actress. I don't have a personal hatred towards her, I don't think. But, like, there's just something about her performance in this role that just does not resonate with me. There are so many times that I feel as though she's more or less phoning in her performance. And so many times from a writing perspective, I just don't find her very interesting, that I don't know as though she's always there for a very good purpose. I know that she has, until you just said the Impossible Girl, had completely forgotten that was even a thing about her. Like, I was like,
Souffle,
oh, okay.
Girl.
I'm like, oh, that's right, Souffle Girl. I mean, I guess that's interesting. I didn't love that they kind of retconned her into the history. I don't know what it is.
I didn't like that either. Yeah. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I don't like that in general on things.
It's very
lazy.
Maybe this is it. For me, it's very much they tried to make Fetch happen with her, and it just didn't happen. K-9 is so fun. He's interesting. He's very unique to what we have on this bracket. There's nothing else like him. He adds a certain element of comedy that Clara certainly doesn't add. I feel like there are so many other humanoid companions on this bracket, like Amy, like River, like Rose, K-9, who's more interesting, more fun, more unique and different from every other companion we have on this bracket. We don't have anything else like him. We need to bring him forward.
So my argument to that is, so Clara is divisive. Clara is divisive in the fandom. She was from when she started. And I don't know if part of that was because Amy Pond was universally beloved and people immediately were just like, I did not ask for this. But I like Jenna Coleman as an actress. I've seen Jenna Coleman in many other things. Mm-hmm. I think she's actually quite good. I think the character was written to be a little bit, I'm trying to look, she's not easy to get along with. Like she's constantly kind of in the doctor's, like she's either flirting way too hard or kind of like pissing him off, like almost deliberately. There's something slightly antagonistic about her. And so I think maybe she wasn't as cuddly as Amy Pond in like almost immediately was.
One of the things that pissed me off most about her as a character is when she said, oh, it's smaller on the outside. No, I'm sorry. That's not how this goes. No. Smaller on the outside is not how this goes. It is like, bigger on the inside.
That's exactly that. In that moment, it exactly defined the relationship between Clara and the doctor. I actually think that was very smart writing because she's going to be a contrarian. From the minute she walks out, you know that she's not just going to go along with it. She's going to be like, why? You know what I mean? Well, I like that about her.
I think with Clara too, and it's just it's a new Who phenomenon too, is that the writers are always trying to outdo how special this companion is, and they always have to have a really
Stephen
dramatic
Moffat
hook.
Particularly.
Yes, at a certain point, Stephen Moffat needed to stop, and he didn't. But I think like with Clara, like there's sometimes was like rehashing old tropes and just like I don't know, like. And then the retconning, I wasn't a big fan of. And again, I agree with you. It's not Jenna Coleman. It's the character. But I think, you know, I think we need I'm still, you know, and I defended him canine, but I think we don't have a good representation of that in this bracket overall. The little more lighthearted and the simpler old, you know, old Who times.
I am all for getting old Who, classic Who, we're going to call it, because we don't want to be ageist. Classic Who, as far as I can into the bracket. But in this particular case, I am going to disagree that Clara is just like a carbon copy of the other new Who companions. I think she brings something. The fact...
Oh, I'm sorry. Not a carbon copy, but like they but just kept similar. Trying to outdo itself.
Yeah. Like or... different. Yes. Variation on the theme, right? But the fact that we've spent like 5+ minutes now debating her to me says that she actually does bring something very interesting to the canon. So we're tied. I don't see anyone changing their vote here. And it is Clara is a 2 seed and K-9 is a 3 seed, which means Clara will advance. I'm sorry. You all can hate at me, but you can get rid of her next round.
Exactly.
Next, the majority of the panel continues to hold a torch for 1 seed Captain Jack Harkness. But I hope to regenerate some interest in the Doctor's Gallifreyan gal pal Romana 2, a 4 seed. Bob, why can Captain Jack continue to get you high tonight? I'll explain why I'm feeling the Womana that is Romana. I will go first because I don't think I'm going to sway anybody here, and I'm completely fine with that. My main thing is, as we kind of alluded to before, I don't consider Captain Jack to be a canonical companion in the same way as season-long companions. Jack's there through many episodes of the Russell T. Davies run, and obviously he gets a spinoff in Torchwood, and he's had a lot of success in that. But I don't see him as one of the, like, quote-unquote true companions. Romana, I do, and also it's a classic Who person. She also brings something completely different from basically any other companion on this list, which is that she's Gallifreyan, and she's assigned to the Doctor by the White Guardian to find the Key of Time. That is all science fiction jargon for the boss wanted someone to keep tabs on this crazy guy. She provided a unique foil to the Doctor, as she herself was Gallifreyan, and while not an equal, on a more level playing field than most of the starry-eyed Earthlings wherever were. She even gets to use her own sonic screwdriver more than once. She is also, I believe, the only companion to properly regenerate on the show, as we had Romana 1, played by Mary Tam, and then Romana 2, played by Lala Ward, up through 1981, and she is subsequently regenerated again in the audio plays, where she is voiced by Juliet Landau, a.k.a. Drusilla from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that does make her unique in the Doctor Who universe in terms of companions. But that being said, I know I'm not going to switch anyone. Bob, before I have you do your Captain Jack, Kara, you're sticking with Captain Jack?
100%, my captain.
Yes, I figured you were. Michael, you'd stick in with Captain Jack?
I'm sticking it in Captain Jack.
Amen to that. And then Bob?
Double pen? I don't know. So, yes, I'm keeping with Captain Jack.
I'll just watch. It's fine.
I think it is so charming that you think that Captain Jack has not experienced double penetration at least once in his life.
I had my picture taken with him at Comic-Con. He smells amazing.
I
That's the type of content you'd come to the great pop culture debate for. So finally in round one, it's tens across the board as regular companion Martha Jones, a 2-seed, currently has the votes to advance over sometimes companion Wilfred Mott, a 3-seed. Kara, why is Mott the boss applesauce? Bob, explain why your feelings about Martha aren't complicated at all. I'm going to have Bob go first since he didn't get to go last round. Go for it, Bob.
Martha is important to Doctor Who because I think she plays a pretty significant and important role to Doctor Who overall. She's involved in events of with the 10th Doctor's regeneration, the Master's story arc. She has, you know, in the series finale in 2007, the last of the Time Lords. Her contributions to the show narrative make her pretty pivotal in those cases. She is a diverse companion for us as a person of color. So I think that's a really cool thing. You know, that's not. There aren't many of those. They're not very prevalent in Doctor Who overall. So she's very intelligent, resourceful. I believe she's a doctor, correct?
Yes. She's an actual physician.
She's an actual doctor. You know, I think she's very independent. She's very funny. She's a great companion to David Tennant. You know, very kind of brother sisterly with regards to that. So I think those are some of the reasons why I think I love Wilfred. It's kind of the Martha was a series long companion. And I think Wilfred, to me, he does absolutely fall in the category of the recurring, not necessarily the companion category. So that's really where I am with Martha.
Well, then on that note, Kara, tell us about Wilfred.
Wilf is every Whovian's beloved granddad. In having him with Donna, Catherine Tate's Donna, she, you know, and in her introduction into the series, she's very brash and loud and confused and this and that. And he's just so kind and quiet and joyous. And he's also a foil for Donna's mother, Sylvia?
I cannot remember.
Yeah, but she's terrible. She's so mean to Donna. And Wilfred is just like so proud of his granddaughter, so supportive. He, you know, he's just got a very warm and lovely personality. But on the other side of that, as we see as we go through more episodes where he interacts with Tennant's doctor more, as bright and warm-hearted as he is, he's one of the characters who's also seen, you know, I believe he served, but he lived through World War II. And you have that instance in the episode Turn Left when the Donna's neighbors are getting, the immigrant housemates are being deported. And he's like, and they're going to labor camps. He's like, that's what they called them last time. And I get chills, like, just thinking about that moment. So he's someone who, despite everything he's seen, believes in goodness, believes in hope, and, you know, wants to see the best of the universe, the best of the doctor, the best for his granddaughter. And there's also that moment towards the end of Tennant's run where Wilfred and the 10th Doctor kind of talk about what is, you know, the impact of having a really long life as a Time Lord and all the things you see, even though they're you know, Wilfred's older, but certainly not as old as the Doctor. And there's a really touching moment where the Doctor says he would be proud if Wilfred was his dad.
I totally get it. He's very, you're right. He's the beepaw everyone wants, right? And we don't have another one of those that I can think of in Who. Michael.
And good comedy timing, too.
Yeah.
Like when he had the antlers on, take those off. I shan't. It's Christmas.
He's also involved in Ten's demise, correct? Like mm-hmm. unwittingly, there's that really horrible moment where he realizes he's actually the reason that Ten gets, yeah, it's, again, it's been so long. Michael, where are you on this one?
I'm sticking with Martha, just for the argument that, like, same thing. I love Wilfred as a character, but he's not a companion.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Martha here, too. And I will say that Martha was not well received by the fandom. Mm-hmm. Martha was a very complicated character. I do think now we can probably say without question a lot of that was due to racism.
Absolutely.
And I don't think maybe at the time we were kind of saying it, but now like we're out and out saying it. Freema Agyeman, who played Martha, is amazing and has gone
Incredible.
On to do great work
yes.
in so many other things, Sense8 notably. But I think Martha got a raw deal. And she was only in one series and out. I don't blame her. I have to give it to Martha overall for her contributions. That's 3 for Martha, 1 for Wilf. So Martha will continue into round 2. And that is it for the end of round 1. We're going to take a quick break so we can get away from the Daleks just by climbing some stairs. We'll be right back after these messages. Exterminate!
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back for round two of our best Doctor Who companion debate. Before we get into the Elite Eight, I want our panelists to share their social media and also let us know when you became a Whovian. I'm going to start with Bob.
Okay, you can find me at DisnerdBob on Instagram, Twitter, this new thing called Threads that's out there. You can find me there. Did I say Mastodon? Mastodon as well. At Disnerd Bob. So that's where you can find me, and you can yell at me for any of the decisions that I've made during this episode. And for getting into Who, it was probably 2013, 2012, somewhere around that time frame, where I don't know why you and I actually, Eric, were having a conversation over text, and you had suggested it or said something, and I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I started with Christopher Eccleston and Rose and Billy Piper, and never turned back. And as janky as some of that early stuff is, like the mannequins from, I stuck with it after the mannequins, everyone. I stuck with it.
Kara, how can people find you, and when did you become a Whovian?
On most social at CMYKARA, CMYKARA, Instagram, Threads, everything else. You can also find my Little Free Library on Instagram at Neighborhood Trolley LFL, which is public and far more active. And love I got it. Into Doctor Who through my husband, then boyfriend. He grew up watching the late night showings of The Sixth Doctor on our local PBS station. So when it re-premiered in 2005, sat me down to watch the Mannequins episode. And I was like, what the fuck are we watching? And it was a good, like, partway through Tennant's run that I finally, like, found my groove with it. And then by the time 11th hit, I was in love. I have a 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver tattoo. So
indeed she does. I can confirm. Michael Schwartz, where can people find you, and also when did you become Whovian?
So you can find me pretty much just on Instagram at Therax, T-H-E-R-A-X 329. There, feel free to flame away on any of the decisions that I make, because I know I'm right and you're wrong when it comes down to it. But I, as the elder statesman of the group here, I started with Doctor Who in the mid-80s, and I started, actually, my doctor is Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor. He's the one that I first found on PBS, watching the reruns that were there, because he was over by the time I started watching, because he finished up in 81. But I got hooked on him. I went back and watched as many episodes before I watched episodes after. And then when the reboot came along, it was nerd-tastic orgasms all over the place for me, with Christopher Eccleston coming along and really just rebooting this and giving this a whole new life that has done my little nerd heart good.
Excellent. Excellent. And so for me, you can find me at Eric Resniak. That's E-R-I-C-R-E, Z as in zebra, S as in snake, N as in Nancy, Y-A-K. Twitter, Instagram. I think I'm on Threads. I don't know. Or really, you should just message the at Grey Pop Culture Debate account on Instagram, on Threads, or at GPCD on Mastodon. We're pretty active over on Mastodon. I officially came to Who during the 10th Doctor's run. Kara Austin and her bed friends kind of looped me in to their Sunday evening viewings. I think it was Sunday evening viewings. Maybe it was Friday.
I don't know. It's whenever we could download the episode from the UK.
Completely, totally legally.
Totally
everybody.
Legally downloading.
Totally legally,
yes.
Downloading.
Sent
it.
By the Queen herself as a personal,
yep,
favor.
Exactly. But that being said, I do distinctly remember watching Baker episodes on the television during the 80s on the weekends. Like, it would just randomly be on some channel. And I always remember thinking they were very strange and not understanding what was going on, but it was very interesting. So I have an affinity for the campiness and the grittiness, but not in like a dark way, of classic Who. So let's move on to round two before the bad wolf catches up to us. First, another unanimous vote for one seed Rose Tyler, who in a battle of the brides of the Doctor,
spoilers,
emerged triumphant over three seed River Song. But we haven't actually talked about Rose yet, so I'd like Michael to share briefly his reasons for why he voted for Rose here and just in general.
She's the original badass of the new Who kind of stuff. Like, Billie Piper playing Rose Tyler really just sets the tone for what the companions are going to be like and what they're going to be capable of in the new Who-verse that we have going on here. She's a girl from the council of housing. You know, she's poor. She's not well mannered. But she is smart as a whip, and she keeps the Doctor in his place, questioning him, pushing him. Really, we get her in series 1, 2, and 4. You know, we take a little break from her, from Martha Jones in between there, but then she comes back. She crosses universes, she crosses dimensions and alternate realities, and she wants this, but she doesn't want it. You know, we have her relationship with the Doctor, but she's also fighting this relationship that she had with Mickey, you know, going on, who's comes this foil for them as well. And I think everybody who grew up more in the new Who versus the classic Who really compare a lot of their companions to what was Rose like and how do they measure up to Rose.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think she is the metric which all modern companions are kind of measured. So thank you for that, Michael. Next, in a classic Who versus new Who smackdown, the panel is split between one seed Amy Pond and two seed Sarah Jane Smith. Michael, I know you have genuine love and admiration for Sarah Jane, so please defend this cherished character. Bob, I know you have genuine love and admiration for Amy Pond, so she's all yours. Well, all yours and Rory's. I'm going to have Bob go first.
All right. So Amy Pond, it's a tough choice between these two. I could see either one going forward. I think they're both very integral and important to the story. For me, Amy is very much an entry point as a companion for Doctor Who. She kind of, for me, represents kind of us in that relationship with the new Doctor. She has this really fun backstory that introduces us in the 11th Hour, where the Doctor meets her when she's a child, and she's got a crack in her wall, and she, you know, I think it's Santa that she's talking to, or she's just praying to God. I'm not sure which it was at that time. I can't remember, but you know, the TARDIS crashes in her garden, and as a little girl, she goes out there, and there's this fantastic man, this what does she call him? The Raggedy Doctor crashes into her garden, and then he leaves her, says, "I'll be back in 5 minutes." And he comes back. He's like, "I'm back." And oh, she's grown up now. And it's just a really fun introduction to Matt Smith as a character, as her as a character. She has, you know, she's a lot of fun. She's got a great comedy. She's amazingly portrayed by Karen Gillan, you know, an introduction to her as an actress to us. And just her relationship to the Doctor is just really interesting, because she initially, like, obviously she has this relationship at home with Rory, but she's going off into the TARDIS with the Doctor and is always like, "Oh, I have to go back and get married. I have to go back and get married. I have to go back and get married." But she's obviously, just enamored or infatuated or just obsessed with this Raggedy Doctor from her childhood, this imaginary friend that came back. You know, it's just a really fun story for her. And Sarah Jane, you know, is the classic companion that, you know, everyone remembers, everyone knows. And she had her own spinoff series. And, you know, she was with the Doctor for so long. You know, they're just both great companions for very different reasons. For me, I just love the portrayal of Amy Pond by Karen Gillan. I love the story. That first season with Matt Smith from Stephen Moffat, that first season for me is just so much fun. And the callbacks throughout that season, it's everything about that season is great. And she's great in it as well. So that's where I am with Amy Pond.
All right, Michael, talk to us about Sarah Jane Smith.
So if we go back to what I was saying about Rose Tyler, where Rose is kind of the touchstone that you compare all the new Who companions to, Sarah Jane is who you compare all the companions too. Whether you're talking classic or new Who, Sarah Jane, and I think Kara said this before, she's the first character that really becomes a co-star to the Doctor. And she's with Tom Baker her entire run. She runs for 80 episodes with him for it. She was around for a very long time for him. And then when they reboot Who in 2005, she gets her own series in 2007 that runs for 2 years, I think. Three, maybe, I forget. But Sarah Jane is, and then she comes back for some additional Doctor Who episodes in the new Whoverse kind of thing. She is smart. She's an investigative journalist. She has a point of view, and she wants to make sure that the entire world sees it. And she never gives up. She never acquiesces in any way, shape, or form. She will put herself in danger to get to the answer, to make things right in the end. She's also the only representative that I think of classic Who that deserves to continue to make it towards the end in this for us. You know, this is the representation that is needed to have an argument about classic Who, new Who, how do they compare, how do they pass, especially for fans out there that have been with this for the beginning. You really need this representation here.
Yeah, I think that those are all great points. Kara, where are you on this one?
I love Amy and I love her as a character. And I just started showing Doctor Who to my soon to be 8-year-old. And we started with the 11th Hour because I think she's 8 years old. He's eight years old. That was such a special moment. But I think if we're, especially if we're looking at where these characters fit in the larger universe, it's Sarah Jane. Because everything that's been said already, but also like she's also this connection between the new and the old. Her chemistry on screen with all the doctors, especially Pertwee and Baker, is again, that's what brought her up, the companion up to that co-star level. And I really do. I think she is the ruler that all other companions are measured against. So I say that with all the love for Amy Pond and her adventures, but I think in the greater scheme of things, it's Sarah Jane Smith.
Yeah, I'm brokenhearted because I adore Amy. I think of the modern ones, it's Amy tied with one other, and it's not Rose for me in terms of my favorites. But if we're looking at Who as an overarching fandom, as an overarching property, Amy's notable because I think the first at least few years of her run are impeccable. They're top tier Who pretty much consistently. It's also, and someone can correct me on this, I believe the most popular the show has ever been, period, internationally. She, Matt Smith, became superstars because of their roles on this show. And both of them are still working at very high levels in Hollywood today. I think I love this character, but if we're talking about who's more critical and a better companion, it's Sarah Jane for me. So we will be advancing Sarah Jane into the final four. Next, we're going to wrap up round two with two more unanimous decisions as Donna Noble, a 1 seed, advances over Clara Oswald, a 2 seed, and 1 seed Captain Jack Harkness is advancing over Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart.
But you know what? He would advance over her.
Absolutely.
Also, where is the Martha Stewart companion episode?
I want to see the cooking show with Jack Harkness and Martha Stewart.
Absolutely. It's going to be filthy. And by the way, we're leaving this in, editor. We're not cutting this out.
Eggplant on the menu again.
Every day. And you don't want to see what they're eating for dessert. So 1 seed Captain Jack Harkness over 2 seed Martha Jones. But again, we have not really talked about Donna or Captain Jack. So I'd like Kara to speak on Captain Jack briefly. And I'm going to chime in on what makes Donna Noble so damn special. Kara, do you mind talking to us a little bit about why you love Captain Jack?
Captain Jack fucks. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Jack Harkness is...
He's going to give you more than the tip.
Speechless. Anyways, Captain Jack is such a fun character and an important character, and fun in like the way he comes. So he comes in during the 2-arc episode with the "Are You My Mummy?" That World War II era London bombing thing. And he comes in as this really, like, if you look at like movies and TVs about that era, there's always that like flashy, charismatic American soldier, and you know, and you I remember thinking like this is going to be like a one-time deal, but then there's all this kind of unravels about him. And but those main things about him are still true. Like he is this charismatic, suave, sweet-talking, can't help but kind of fall for this guy character who go, you know, and when we talk about the impact, and again, I can see where the argument made, is he a companion? Is he a reoccurring character? But I mean, of all of them, he gets the biggest spinoff series of anybody on this show that he gets to go run with. He's the first queer character on in Doctor Who on the screen. And he's got every, you know, he's also of a lot of comic relief. I can't think of the episode it is, but when he's getting chained, like redressed by those robots, and like he gets to, like, down, I mean, I don't think it takes a lot to talk John Barrowman out of his clothes.
I was going to say really the episode where he takes his clothes off, like I'm like, oh, yeah. What's happening here? I'm not paying attention.
Yes. Oh, hello. What's how? Yeah. And he like it's an actor just devouring a role and being born into it. And I think he's just so much fun. And then again, just creates essentially a whole world around this character that goes off into its own series.
Yeah, he's great. There's no question. I want to talk a little bit about Donna Noble, both of which, by the way, Captain Jack and Donna are advancing to the final four. I just want to make sure we're not dismissing them without discussing them. So Donna is interesting to me. She's played by Catherine Tate. She's initially introduced in a Christmas episode, correct? Mm-hmm. I believe it's a Christmas episode. And I actually hated her in that episode. Yep. I hated. She was obnoxious.
She's abrasive.
She's so abrasive in that episode. And when I heard that they were bringing her back as a full-time companion, I was like, oh, God, it's going to be just insufferable. And then she's amazing. That whole season with the two of them. And, like, I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but essentially Donna Noble gets essentially the Dark Phoenix treatment from the X-Men comics. That's what happens. She basically becomes omnipotent, and it's incredible. Catherine Tate acts the shit out of it. The turn left episode is iconic, and I was just reading something that it very nearly didn't happen. It was a filler episode that they did because they didn't have the budget to do something else they wanted. But she took what makes her amazing is she had a terrible start and she turned it around to become so beloved, tragic, but also in a way that you still feel really good for Donna in the end. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, she's coming back as part
That's
of
correct.
The
yes, universe. Correct. Yes. And she's really important to it too, yes. Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm delighted that she's returning. I think she's an amazing character. The breadth and depth of that character, I would argue, is probably greater than just about any of the other companions, at least from Modern Who. And so I'm delighted that she's not just here, but she's in the final four. So with that being said, we have our final four. We're going to take another quick break to see if we can steal a TARDIS. We'll be right back after these messages. And we are back with the final four of our best Doctor Who companion debate. At this point in the show, I always like to take a step back and see if the final four matches up with what I figured. We have three number one seeds and one 2 seed in the mix. I do think that Sarah Jane, the 2 seed, was probably undervalued. I think, again, we said that New Who skews very strong with this. I think the other 1 seed was, who was it? Does anybody
Amy
know?
Amy Pond.
Amy. Yeah, not that she's being overvalued, because I don't think that's true at all. If anything, I think of these, Jack is the one who maybe was a little bit overvalued.
Yeah,
but Sarah definitely deserves to be in here. And obviously Rose is unimpeachable. So with that being said, we are going to jump right in. I'm going to go around the horn. First vote, it's Rose Tyler versus Sarah Jane Smith. I'm going to start with Bob. Where are you voting?
Rose.
Kara.
I'm going to Sarah Jane.
Michael.
Sarah Jane.
Ooh, this is tough, and I was not expecting to make this decision. So I'm going to go back to something that was discussed last round, where we said that Rose is the measuring stick that all modern companions are compared to. But I think then Kara correctly said Sarah Jane is the measuring stick all companions are compared to, which I think is very important. Also, I do think it is completely fair to have a classic Who and a new Who here. I know that people love Rose Tyler, and I love her too, but if I'm being honest, she's not one of my top two new Who ones. It's Amy and it's Donna for me. So I'm actually going to give it to Sarah Jane. I am. So that means it's 3 for Sarah Jane, 1 for Rose. Bob, do you have anything to say with Rose going out?
Is Amy Pilot here right now?
Because I need her.
Here's the Amy Pilot
to walk off this podcast. What the fuck just happened? Are we fucking kidding right now?
If there's someone to lose to,
it's called payback.
Yeah, if there's someone to lose to, that is the truth of it. Rose is the ultimate number one. She got the most votes. And when I said this to people, I was like, oh, the answer is obviously Rose. But I think that's a knee-jerk reaction, and it's not, in fact, based on real logic and argument. Do you still disagree, Bob?
I disagree. She's so important to New Who, but I think she's important to Who overall. It's so interesting in that first series that Russell T. Davies took her as the companion and went with that whole Bad Wolf storyline and really incorporated her as not just the companion, but such a critical and pivotal piece of just the overall fabric and narrative of the series. She's so important to that. She spans two different doctors. She has that really incredible chemistry and relationship with Doctor Who, unlike a relationship that we've had with any other companion and doctor situation, where they're pretty much in a romance by the end, right? And they're, you know, parting ways is such a heartbreaking thing for them in the end. She brings so much emotional gravity to the show overall. And I get that Sarah Jane has those pieces too, but there were really emotionally important parts of the original and old Who, right? But I don't know as though that they were operating at that level that original few series were with Rose Tyler to get us to a point where we are just heartbroken and weeping in the end for what happened between those two characters. I just find her so important and interesting to the whole series overall. And I get that Sarah Jane is very important as well. I'm not ultimately going to be mad if Sarah Jane does go forward here, but I, she's more than just the companion. There's so much more. There's so many more important aspects of what she did for the series.
And go ahead, Kara. No, please.
I think part of it, like, I understand, like, the emotion that comes in with Rose is just a matter of how storytelling, especially in Doctor Who, changes from the times that these are both made in. Like, you just don't have that type of storytelling in those older Who episodes. But I think other than that, everything you said, you could either say Rose or Sarah Jane, and it could be valid as far as chemistry with the doctor they're on screen with, the importance of that, you know, how they elevated that role and their part in the Whoniverse. And that's what makes this very difficult.
Well, it didn't seem difficult for all of you when you all just voted Sarah Jane and moved on.
It is difficult. And I will also, didn't Rose's arc end with Rose ending up in a different universe with another version of the 10th Doctor? Is that not how it ends?
Yeah, I believe that's accurate. She's definitely in a pocket universe elsewhere.
Yeah.
And like she comes back for the 50th to bring more of the Bad Wolf energy into it, the 50th anniversary special as well, which she's incredible in. Let's talk about Billie Piper for a second, just real quick, right? Nobody expected her to be anything. She was a singer. She had a singing career. She came in and fucking nailed this, and the world fell in love with her as an actress. And my God, I love Billie Piper.
No, it's true. I think, Bob, what if in your mind, we've created a pocket dimension where Rose did make the final two?
All right.
There's a pocket dimension in which Rose Tyler is advancing into the final two, but in this dimension, it is Sarah Jane Smith.
Are you willing to put Donna in that pocket dimension when we get there?
Well, let's see what happens. It's Donna Noble versus Captain Jack Harkness. I'm going to go backwards order. Michael, where are you voting on this one?
Donna.
Kara, where are you voting?
Donna.
Bob, where are you voting?
Captain Jack.
Are you voting Captain Jack just to be spite? Yes. Because I cherish that.
The imposter says yes.
There's a small amount of spite store here in this answer. I understand the Donna thing very much, and I understand why some people love her, but I think she can be divisive, however you want to pronounce that word, amongst the fandom in general because of the reasons you said. I did still think that there was some annoying aspects to her. That actual season overall feels kind of like almost a pocket season to me a little bit. Like, it, for some reason, there's just something about it that seems just off to the left, like as though we took a sidebar, we spent some time with Donna, and now we're back to the real meat and potatoes of the Doctor Who storyline. I know that that's completely crazy and that's not the case. It's just how it feels to me. I just never got the Donna thing at the same level that other people do. I do love Catherine Tate. I think she's great. She just never resonated or hit with me overall. So, I mean, yes, I'm probably going to say you're already going to outvote me, I'm sure. But so I'll stick with Jack just to represent the LGBTQ representation on this bracket. So.
No, I love that. And even if it was strictly a spite vote, I respect it. You know, I do. So I am voting for Donna here for all the reasons I said in the last round, which gives us a final two of Rose. Excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, Eric's caught in the pocket universe.
Wow. I'm fine with universe. It. I allow it. I allow it.
Of Sarah Jane Smith versus Donna Noble. I'm going to start right in the middle with Bob. Two choices you didn't want. Pick the one.
Which one you want me to pick, guys?
Pick canine.
Whichever one you want.
I will take, let's see. I'm going to go with Sarah Jane in this pairing.
All right. Kara, where are you?
I'm ultimately going to go with Sarah Jane, but I wanted to say this about Donna. And one of the reasons that she is so endeared to me is that Donna's first episode was very, she's very abrasive, but I think it's the most honest reaction of a human being encountering the Doctor in their regular everyday life, but she's like getting married. Some weirdo in a suit drops out of space and is just like, all these things are happening and she's just screaming like, what's happening? Who are you? I don't want to be your mate. Like, just over the top. And I think that's honestly how any of us would probably react. And I like that Catherine Tate brought that to the character, especially in the beginning. And then as she gets used to the universe and, she kind of grows from there. But again, Sarah Jane Smith is the companion all other companions are measured against. And if that doesn't make you number one, I don't know what does.
Michael.
And I agree. I could watch a Donna Noble season over and over and over again and love every minute of it. The life that she brings to it, just Catherine Tate in general, I could watch her read the freaking phone book for God's sake. She's just so funny. But in the end, like, it goes back to that argument again. And I am a Sarah Jane Smith stan. And we talked about this even when we started doing this research for this kind of thing. I knew that I wanted to do Sarah Jane all the way to the end.
Which one do I prefer personally to watch? It's Donna Noble. Which one is the better companion and more important to Who? It's Sarah Jane Smith. So there you have it, folks. Our pick for the best Doctor Who companion is Sarah Jane Smith. Do you agree? Do you think this decision is as confusing as that timeless child retcon? Tell us how you really feel by leaving a comment on this episode at greatpopculturedebate.com or find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or Mastodon. While you're there, make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast so you can hear about what new debates are coming soon, vote in open polls, and even decide which topics we tackle next. If you really enjoyed this episode, please take a minute to like and rate the episode of the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or whatever platform you listen on. I want to say thank you to my panel. I would gladly frolic through time and space with you any day. And thank you for listening. If you loved what you heard, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where you can get even more exclusive content and get episodes a whole day early. We hope you have a good one. And remember, everyone is entitled to the wrong opinion.
Yeah, it's cool. Bow ties are cool.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.